south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, how about a boots on the ground, getting pulled over by the cops story? Something that just happened to me on Sunday, and here's how it went down. Some Latino friends of mine, who don't speak any English, by the way, invited me to a very special outing, a kind of a lazy Sunday afternoon Latino picnic. Now, it happens to be on a river, actually in a river. Nothing polluted about it either. It was beautiful, clear, fresh water coming right out of the mountains. So we had to drive about an hour and a half from the big city to get there. It's way in the boonies. Tell you about that later. So anyway, we have two cars. The front car is a van, Latino guy driving it, and I'm driving a car behind it. And right as we were getting out of the city, it's a big highway now, there was one of those usual suspect police roadblocks, just checking cars here and there for licenses, registration, pretty much anything they can fault you for to try to squeeze some bribe money out of you. You know, this is Latin America. So the van in front of me whizzes right on by them, and they wave me over. There were just two cops pulling over, and that's usually when they try to hitch up for bribes. Any more than three or four cops at a stop, they'll almost never try to gouge you. Because, you know, then there's way too many witnesses, in case you want to file a formal complaint. Not that anybody would, I've never heard of a case, but, you know, these days with everyone recording everything and anything on their smartphones, well, let's just say one or two cops can easily block and cover for each other. But any more than that, there'll be just too many cars pulled over at once, and someone just might be filming. So keep that in mind next time you're south of the border. If it's a bunch of cops pulling people over, don't worry, they're not going to nail you for a bribe. Though it could easily happen if you're dealing with one or two cops. Even so, don't worry if they try to bribe you. Just pay the bribe. It's always small, 20 bucks or so. In fact, a lot of smart gringos who've been down here a long time, they just come right out and say, hey, I've only got 20 bucks on me. That way you can take some control of the situation yourself. Set some bribery limits, you know? So anyway, I get pulled over. A lady cop walks up to me. First thing I said is, ¿habla inglés? Do you speak English? She said no, so I went into plan A, which is, I don't speak any Spanish. No hablo español. That's when they usually roll their eyes and say, oh, hell, this ain't going to be worth it, and they wave you right on through. I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. And you know, I'll tell you, it's a big mistake if you've learned some Spanish to try to practice it on cops, because then for sure they're going to put more time and effort into hassling you. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, if there's a lady cop involved, you'll almost never get nailed for mordida, you know, for bribes. It seems to be a kind of universal law that males in all careers and walks of life are much more corruptible than females. Unless, of course, your name happens to be Clinton. Then you're born with the ugly gene, too. So I figured correctly, it's going to be on the up and up, no bribe here. And then the male cop walked over, looked at my car papers, they were in perfect order, and said, licencia, por favor, joven. Man, you gotta love it down here when people are talking to you and they slip in that word joven, J-O-V-E-N. That means young man. And really, I'm sure I had 20-something years on that guy, and he still called me young man, joven. And he wasn't being sarcastic. They never seem to be sarcastic with gringos, because they figure we don't understand enough Spanish to get it. And they're never sarcastic when using that word joven, young man. By the way, Latinos do use sarcasm here. They call it sarcástica. Or if it's a guy, sarcástico. In fact, my girlfriend accuses me of it all the time. She says, are you being sarcastic? Eres sarcástica? And believe me, she knows it when she hears it, because she's pretty good at it herself when she wants to be. Though in a fun way. So anyway, I dug into my passport pouch. You've heard me talk about that special passport pouch I carry. It's RFID proof, only about 15 bucks. It wraps through your belt on a loop and tucks into your pants. It's extremely well concealed, impossible to detect even if you're getting patted down, because it's hanging in the front of your pants, not hanging on your left or right side or backside. By the way, you longtime listeners may have heard me say, I've known of a few instances where gringos have been robbed or rolled, almost always when they're doing something they shouldn't, like hanging around a bad neighborhood or climbing an isolated volcano somewhere. Anyway, gringos and expats have told me they've never been padded down on the front, you know, the groin area. Even, you know, when you're walking to a bar or a disco, I know you can't do that anymore with this COVID idiot crap, but in the past, you'd get the pat down at the front door. Well, they'll never touch you in the groin area because it's a very macho society, and they consider it unmanly to touch a man's private parts, even in a pat down. Latino men will tell you it's too much of a maricon thing to do, too much of a gay thing. Hey, just ask one. You'll see. Which is why that passport pouch that I've been using for 30 years now. Actually, I've gone through a couple of them in 30 years because they do wear out like anything. But just note, if you have one and you wear it the way it's supposed to be worn in the front, even if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, I bet you the bad guys miss it completely. Just as they have no idea of the existence of zippered belts. God, I love those things. I'm always wearing one. By the way, if you want to know the pouch I use and have been using for 30 years now, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. You can get it on Amazon for something like $15. Hey, and don't send me any hate mail about using Amazon. I mean, look, what are you supposed to do? Not use them in protest? Is that puny effort going to help things? Get real. Oh, and about those excellent real leather zippered belts that I use. Sorry, but for now anyway, you can only get the real nice ones. In one of those cool little towns around Lake Atitlan, Guatemala, the most beautiful lake in the world. Could be the second most beautiful, though. Some say Lake Como in Italy is number one. It's all a matter of taste. So don't forget, if you're visiting Guatemala or come down to the seminar, check out those excellent hand-tooled zippered belts. They come in lots of different styles, shapes, and colors, and are only around $15 each. Hey, now there's a fantastic gringo export business idea. Would be perfect to sell on the internet. I can't believe no one's thought of it yet. Sure, there are zippered belts on the internet, but they're crap compared to these. Oh well. So anyway, the cop wants my driver's license. I dig into my passport pouch and my license is not there. Actually, I've got a couple of valid licenses from a couple of different countries and none of them were there. And it was my bad because I have three of those passport pouches and I just happened to grab the wrong one. And I knew because there was a woman cop present, I wouldn't be able to bribe these guys, so I was going to get a ticket. So the next question, obviously, was, do you have a license? I said, yeah, I left it at home. We can go over there if you want. You follow me back and I'll show you. Well, you know, they would have done that. The lady cop was just about ready to bite. Yep, I think because of that gringo advantage, they would have obliged. So they discussed it for a minute. In the end, they thought better of the idea. They had the orange pylons out on the road. And they couldn't leave their assigned station. They said, look, we'd like to, but we're posted here for the day. So the lady wrote me up a ticket for not having a license. The cost, $25, to be paid at the nearest police station or bank, whatever. But here's the thing. They didn't make me get out and have someone else drive. They didn't impound my car, which is exactly what they would have done if that had happened to me up in Illinois or Cleveland. And that $25 fine for not having a license? Well, I just looked up a site that shows fines state by state for driving without possession of your license. Well, the fines range from $100 to $200, 3 to 6 points off your license. And if you're alone, they'll impound your car. And if you're with someone, they'll have to drive. And if they impound your car, it'll cost you around $500 to get it out of the lockup. Plus, you'll have to go to court and produce your valid license. So that's a day or at least a whole morning down the drain, too. You get the point, right? Oh, and by the way, you heard me talk about that book, Three Felonies a Day. And people have sent me emails saying, nah, that can't be right. Sorry, it's true. Well, how about this one, for example? If you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and you occupy a driver's seat of a car, and the engine is running, you don't have to be driving, doesn't have to be moving, but if the engine is running, in most states of the union, you've committed a felony. So, for example, if you're just a little bit wasted and you slide across the seat through the driver's side door to get to the passenger seat, you've just committed a felony. And of course, if you're a regular driver and you use the cell phone or text at any time at all, each time it's a misdemeanor. And of course, every time you pop just 1 mile an hour over the speed limit, you've committed a misdemeanor. And if you're stopped for speeding, you could also get ticketed for reckless driving. Also a misdemeanor, but if you get a ticket for reckless endangerment of others, that's a felony. Like, for example, reaching in the back of your car to slap your kid. Of course, you probably knew that already, but maybe you didn't. Oh, and another thing happened while being stopped at the cops. The van with my Latino friends in it ahead stopped, turned around, and pulled up right behind me while I was talking to the cops. I mean, right behind me. And they slid open the van door, pulled out a cooler, popped a few beers, and just started drinking. After all, it was Sunday, and we were going to a picnic. And when the cops finally waved me on my way, the van followed, and everyone in that van, including the driver, was holding a plastic cup full of beer. As they passed, they waved to the cops, and the cops waved back. Again, if that would have happened up in the States, you can only imagine what the fines would be and how many hours we'd have wasted down at the police station. Oh, but the plot thickens. On our way back from that picnic, a couple hours later, the van blew his front right tire. Now, I got to tell you something about the driver. He and his family own a couple of stores that sell car parts, mostly bumpers, grills, doors, and fenders, for customers that own body shops. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. He did not have a spare tire. An absolutely predictable Latin American move. I'd say 80 or even 90% of the cars in Latin America either don't have a spare or the spare's blown or doesn't have any air in it. And you know, when gringos get together, inevitably, we start talking about what Latin Americans call locuras. The root word there is loco. The fact that Latinos do many crazy, stupid things, like driving around without a spare or having a big-ass crack in your windshield forever and just not getting it fixed. So there we were on this big highway out in the middle of nowhere. No spare tire for the Toyota van, and I was driving a Toyota Yaris. So I grabbed my spare. I've always got a spare in good shape. Problem is, my spare had four holes in it, you know, where you mount the nuts, and his van had five holes where you mount the nuts, so it wasn't a match. Makes you wonder why Toyota hasn't standardized the wheel rims. Why have rims with four and five holes? I don't get it. The Japanese usually have those kind of basic bases covered. So anyway, we pulled off the rim. I threw it in the trunk of my car, drove out to a pinchazo, sometimes known as a gomero. That's a tire repair place. By the way, gomero has the root word gum, as in rubber. Makes sense? And pinchazo has the root word pinch, as in pinching someone or pinching something like a tire until you've perforated. Makes sense too. Pinchazo. So I found a gomero / pinchazo, bought a new tire because the other one was shredded. Actually bought a used tire. He mounted it, balanced it, etc. Total charge, $15. And the used tire, not half bad. So I drove back to the big highway. When I got there, there was a cop car parked right in front of it with the lights flashing. He wasn't there to hassle anyone. He was just providing help, road assistance. And I said to him, I suppose you got lots of work helping people. He said, yeah. And he confirmed there was dozens of blowouts a day on that highway. And only maybe 70 to 80% had a serviceable spare. And he said half the people don't have a jack or a nut remover, or they've got a nut remover, no jack, or a jack that's broken, or a jack without the handle to crank it up. And so he lifted the back tarp on his police cruiser pickup, and he had a couple of jacks and nut wrenches in there, just because it was necessary for a cop who patrols that highway. Again, only in Latin America. Oh, and when I got back, everyone was drinking beer out of cups again, including the driver. And yes, they offered the cop a beer, of course. And he did accept a can, but he put it in his cruiser. He didn't drink it in front of us. I suppose, again, because anybody could be filming it and posting it on the web. So it really is a fact of life that getting bribed by the cops is definitely being riskier and riskier for them. It's a developing story. We'll keep an eye on it and keep you posted. Now, as for me, when I first got down to Latin America, I used to think, wow, I can't believe it. Is everyone corrupt? Because, you know, until I got to Latin America, I never witnessed a case where a cop was bribed. Not up in the States. The average guy on the street wouldn't want to try that, even in Chicago. In the States, bribing cops is best left to mafia types and politicians. They are cut from the same cloth, you know. But the average guy on the street, man, he just would never try to attempt to bribe a cop. And U.S. cops themselves don't shake down the average guy either. Though American cops might be corrupt and shake down drug dealers and stuff. I'm sure you've seen that movie. The average guy never gets a whiff of that. Though it seems everyone here in Latin America who drives a car or a motorcycle knows the cops are always looking for donations. Ha ha. Now about that picnic I went to that took place on this river. In fact, it took place in the river. I took pictures of it. So if you want some cheap thrills, send me an email, thexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll shoot you off a couple of those pics. So as it turns out, way up a mountainside, about halfway to the top, there's a specific river with some steep rapids. Well, they built a little park, and they've got some barbecue-style outdoor restaurants, nothing fancy. And as it turns out, those restaurants will take plastic chairs and tables, you know, the ones that have a hole in the center so you can stick an umbrella in it, outdoor cafe style. Well, when you order your food and drink, it's dirt cheap, by the way. It's not high class. It's very casual. They'll take one of those plastic tables and chairs and umbrella and stick it in the river. Now, the river itself is really moving, and it's about 75 to 100 foot wide, and they stick those tables right in the center of it. And when you're sitting down in that chair, the water's rushing by you pretty fast, and you're in it. The top of the table's maybe only a half a foot from the surface of the water. So you are, when you're sitting there, basically up to your navel in water. And people just sit there all day drinking and eating, partying and carrying on. It's a family affair with kids, dogs, and grandma, too. And get this, people bring their hookahs. You know, that's a faddish thing right now, smoking a hookah pipe. As for me, I didn't want to sit in the river. I sat in the cafe on the edge of the bank. But while I was there, I saw at least 4 big hookah pipes sitting on top of those tables right in the middle of the river, people just toking away. Now, I don't know what they smoke in those things. I never tried it. But the whole area kind of smelled like incense and menthol. So definitely it was one of those only in Latin America experiences. Really was a lot of fun. Just one observation, though. Even though we were in the tropics, that water coming off the top of that mountain was cold. But the people there in that water eating at those tables, and I'd say there were at least 100 of them or so, the temperature of that water didn't bother them at all. They were having a great old time. Oh, and here's the thing. You can order your food and get a table inside that river, but you can bring your own cooler, too, and your own wine and beer and everything, even food. And the restaurants don't seem to care as long as you're ordering something. By the way, there's an odd thing about Latin American restaurants. A lot of them, even the high-class ones, will let you bring a bottle of wine to dinner. You know you can never get away with that up in the States. Anyway, if you do bring your own bottle, which is a really cheap-ass thing to do, I know, but I've seen some gringos and expats do that, often backpacker types. What the waiter will do is bring over a corkscrew and charge you a little fee on your bill called a descorche fee. Descorche means uncorking fee. Corche meaning cork. A bottle opening fee. So if you bring your own bottle of wine, the restaurants that allow you to do it will probably charge you around $1 to open each one. But like I said, you really look like a cheap ass if you bring your own wine to a restaurant, huh? What will your date think? Hey, but again, this is Latin America. Full disclosure here, I've been called cheap a lot of times in my life. Captain Mango says that about me all the time. But I've never brought a bottle of wine to a restaurant. That's pushing it. And now, this short email from Richard. Hey, Johnny, what about a seminar alternative? Did you know Panama Relocation Tours is now offering online guides in lieu of having their seminars? He says, how about you? Something to think about for your own seminars. All right, thanks for that, Richard. Yeah, I know. That's why Zoom is so popular now. But here's the thing, Richard. You know, at least half of the value of my seminar is in meeting my crew, other gringos and expats who are living down here, hooking and hanging up with my expat network, getting some extremely valuable boots on the ground time, checking out hospitals, clinics, real estate, businesses, factories, volcanoes, schools and universities. And you really have to experience the Altiplano climate to believe it. I'll tell you, that's the real value of the seminar. And then every night around 7, we all get together, go to dinner and hang for quite a few hours and do the kind of bonding you could never do on the internet with a Zoom conference. So I really won't and can't convert my seminars to some kind of online conference. But what I have been doing over the last couple of months, you probably remember my Expat Essentials course of a few years back, formerly known as the Five Flags course. Remember, it was 8 hours of audio and video, what you might call Johnny's complete guide to getting out of Dodge. Well, in the last couple of months, I've completely updated and revamped that program. I'm almost done. Probably in a month or two, it'll be ready. It's all new, and I've added a couple of extra chapters and brand new flags, too. So the program will have various chapters. It'll be at least 10 hours long. You'll want to have it. You won't want to miss it, because it truly will be my latest, greatest, ultra-complete guide to getting out of Dodge. So stay tuned for that. But, of course, there's no boots on the ground. There can't be. And that's what my Expat Insider Seminars are all about. And the next seminar will be launching just as soon as those idiot government blockheads get it together on this COVID-idiot testing and start offering that quick, almost instant, 5 or 10 minutes anyway, COVID test right at the airport, as they're doing in many countries in Europe right now. When that happens, and it's coming soon because airlines and the tourist and hospitality businesses have been devastated. And the only way to rev it back up to some degree anyway, they'll never get back to normal. is to make it easy for people to get that stupid test. Though you have to ask yourself, why don't countries do what Costa Rica, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and quite a few other countries are doing? That is, let you enter the country, and if you're showing signs of being sick or have a fever, you just don't look well while you're standing there in line at the airport. They pull you aside and give you the quick test. But they don't require anyone, upon arrival, to get any kind of test at all. So that's what it's like in the aforementioned countries. But it seems just way too logical for governments to initiate that in the rest of the world. But that's what you get when the government locks things down and makes you play by their stupid rules. Though I always remember what my grandma said. She said, "Johnny, please forgive the retarded. They know not what they say or do. But don't feel too sorry for them. They have a safety net. It's called a government job." And now for something completely different. I'm looking at my electric bill now. Why am I doing that? Because I get all kinds of emails from people saying, "Johnny, I'm an expat living in so-and-so Latin country," or "I'm just visiting and I look at the electric bill on the table and I can't make head nor tail of it." And not just because it's in Spanish either. There's just so many ungodly charts and figures and calculations. I don't even look or care about that. I just pay the final amount calculated on the bottom line and get it over with. In fact, the last email I got on that subject was from Rory just yesterday. He's in Panama, speaks Spanish on a 5 or 6 level, and still can't figure out his electric bill. So I'm going to plow through mine today for you. Oh, and not that your electric bill in the States is any less confusing, but that's your problem. Of course, you've got a much bigger problem. That's the fact that you haven't been able to get out of Dodge yet. But that's why you're listening to this show, right? Anyway, let me explain a few things for you first. Now, throughout Latin America, thankfully, most all power utility companies have sold out part of their business to a private entity, at least 50%. Of most, Latin country powered utilities are owned privately in a partnership with government. And so their power plants, power lines, and infrastructure are pretty much first world. However, there are gringos and expats that have frequent power outages, and that's not due to the power companies themselves. It's usually due to some bad wiring construction within their own gated, guarded community or neighborhood. In other words, if you build a gated, guarded community, the national power company will bring the lines in, but you have to contract your own electricians to do the rest. So if the electrical contractors who wired your neighborhood are pudding heads, your colony or neighborhood will suffer many little power outages. In fact, one of our best expat buddies, Oscar Miner, the crypto and Bitcoin mining king, he's stuck in one of those gated, guarded communities with lots of little power outages himself. Meanwhile, the neighboring gated, guarded communities have no power outage problems at all. I know. When you say colony, gringos and expats picture a nest or hive of wasps, or they're thinking about some apocalyptic B-grade zombie movie. But here, neighborhoods are called colonies or colonias, so get used to it. Now, the thing is, practically every Latin American power company has been forced by the government into providing subsidies for the poor and the lower middle classes. So then how do they determine that? Well, logically, poor people use a lot less electricity. They don't have air conditioning, dishwashers, trash compactors, computers, vacuum cleaners, and treadmills. Most of the poor and lower middle classes here in Latin America have just maybe one TV, a small refrigerator, and some light bulbs hanging. And the vast majority of them use under 200 kilowatt hours a month. Now, if you look at your own bill, you'll see there's a total of the number of kilowatt hours you use a month. Everyone's monthly electric bill the world over has that total. Sometimes there'll even be a bar graph on your bill showing the last 3 to 6 months of usage. Now, some, if not most, Latin American countries actually have a 3-tiered subsidy system. For example, there's a certain rate for the first 200 kilowatt hours used, and then there's another rate from 200 to 300 or 400 or 500, depending on the country. And then the real pricey kilowatt hour rate kicks in if you're using more than 300, 400, or 500 kilowatts, depending on the country. So here's the breakdown of last month's electric bill for me. It's in the local funny money, so I'll switch it to dollars here. I consumed for the month of January, and the bill it says consumo, 315 kilowatt hours that month. And the cost breakdown is like this. I have a fixed charge just for having the service. Everyone has that, and it's about $2 a month. And for the first 200 kilowatt hours used, I'm charged, along with the pole folks who are in that range, 8.5 cents a kilowatt hour, which for me works out to $17. Now, for the next 100 kilowatts, it's a little more expensive. which is also partially subsidized at 12 cents a kilowatt hour. So that 100 kilowatts costs me 12 bucks. Now remember, I use 315 kilowatts for the month. So the last 15 kilowatts are the most expensive. In other words, there's no subsidy anymore. Costs me 18 cents a kilowatt hour. And that final 15 kilowatts cost me around $2.75. So my total bill for the month of January, 315 kilowatt hours used, works out to 49 bucks. Now compare that to the United States. If you were using the same amount of kilowatt hours, 315 per month, which would be exceptionally low if I was up in the States, but I'm just a single guy. Up there, the average household of four uses about 1,000 kilowatts a month, about three times what I do. And the average kilowatt hour cost in the States varies a lot from state to state, but in general, it's around 13 cents a kilowatt hour, though actually more like 9 cents. The rest is all extra charges and taxes. So the average household of four in the United States pays around 130 bucks a month for their electric bill. So figure it this way. The average family of four in the States uses around 12,000 kilowatt hours a year, as mentioned, around 1,000 a month. Whereas in Latin America, because there are so many lower middle class and poor people, the average family uses only around 1,800 kilowatt hours a year, or 150 kilowatt hours a month, which falls nicely below that 200 kilowatt hours a month that's heavily subsidized. And in that range, the average person's paying less than half of the real cost of the electric power service. Now, you might ask the question, Johnny, you have an electric bill? I thought you had solar. You're off the grid. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm in the process of assembling a complete power wall system that will take me completely off the grid once again, with this new system having lithium batteries to the tune of 30 kilowatts. Plenty to power the house and charge a car like a Tesla. Anyway, that's my latest project. I'll keep you posted. But of course, I am installing the latest and greatest battery pack technology. And my panels, the latest and greatest too. 450 watts apiece. Wow. I'm getting them from that company, Canadian Solar. I'll have 24 of them, and they'll put out a little more than 10,000 watts an hour when the sun's shining. That's 10 kilowatts an hour. My advice, since solar is so cheap these days, buy more than you need. That way you can keep the air conditioning going if you have it, and keep extra lights burning without people nagging you like my mother used to do. Always saying, turn the lights off when you leave the room. Electricity doesn't grow on trees. Though these days, if you've got a nice solar system, it kind of does.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.